Good afternoon, everybody. That's a deep breath there. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina, and we are doing Movement Museum, where we talk about dance in Montreal on your radio, on your mobile device, on your computer, any place you like. On the radio, it's at CKUT 90.3 FM. On the computer, it's movement-museum.blogspot.com. And on your mobile device, go to iTunes and dump in Movement Museum, and you can find us that way. And since my heart is going pitter-patter, 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 we have a poem for you by Robinson Jeffers. It's called New Mexican Mountain. I watch the Indians dancing to help the young Cornetao's pueblo. The old men squat in a ring and make the song. The young women with fat bare arms and a few shame-faced young men shuffle the dance. The lean-muscled young men are naked to the narrow loins, their breasts and backs daubed with white clay. Two eagle feathers plume the blackheads. They dance with reluctance. They are growing civilized. The old men persuade them. Only the drum is confident. It thinks the world has not changed. The beating heart, the simplest of rhythms, it thinks the world has not changed at all. It is only a dreamer, a brainless heart. The drum has no eyes. These tourists have eyes, the 100 watching the dance, white Americans hungrily too, with reverence, not laughter. Pilgrims from civilization, anxiously seeking beauty, religion, poetry, pilgrims from the vacuum. People from cities anxious to be human again. Poor show how they suck you empty. The Indians are emptied, and certainly there was never religion enough, nor beauty, nor poetry here to fill Americans. Only the drum is confident. It thinks the world has not changed. Apparently only myself and the strong tribal drum and the rocket of Taos Mountains remember that civilization is a transient sickness.
Hmm.
That's interesting.
That was really good.
Okay.
I really like that one. And gives me an idea.
Cool. What's the idea?
Well, we should go maybe to Kanawagi and get some of those guys in.
That would be very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, in the meantime, since we aren't in Kanawagi and we don't have them, we do have Lena Cruz here. Thank you very much for coming in.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I don't know exactly where and how to start and so on. The one thing, in going through the bio, the way I'm sort of insanely jealous.
About?
the fact that you're going off to Spain in like a week and a half.
I know. Yeah, it's going to be great to be there. We're going to three cities, and with all the dancers, it's really going to be a treat to be able to present the piece in three different, very, very different spaces. Which contributes to precisely what we want to do with this piece, which is adapted to each space. We are going to a museum.
Yes. Oh, very, yes. Very cool.
Yes. So it's going to be performed in it's a gallery. It's one of the exhibit spaces in the museum. It's mm-hmm. a contemporary art museum, and so they adapt it in a way that they present dance quite regularly. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that.
There it's which one? For when the weather gets better. Do you know about the Dia Art Foundation in Beacon, New York?
No.
It's a art gallery that's on the Hudson, and it's I think 350,000 square feet, and it basically deals with minimalist art.
Okay.
And they regularly have performances by Trisha Brown's company.
Okay.
There.
Yes.
And yeah, that's was the question I was going to ask: is how do you organize it? Get a tour in Spain in the when it's getting cold, gray, and ugly, and stuff like that. And you should talk to whoever does that for you to get them down to Beacon as well.
That would be great. Mm-hmm. That would be great.
But yes, how does one get a tour into Spain?
I've been working on this tour for 4 or 5 years almost, from the first time I made the contact, and we evaluated. First of all, you evaluate if there's interest, and then the possibilities that they need to make things fit in their calendar and their mandate too, because every year the festival has a different approach, a different mandate. So finally things clicked, but it took 4 years, very, very difficult. And
so then, okay, then backtracking, because this is all sort of new to me. I can recognize that you probably need a whole sort of first this, then this, then this. So first it was, we should get the name, because you were also not only touring in Spain and so on, but you were here at La Gare de la Danse until Saturday, right?
Until Saturday. We started last night and it goes until Saturday.
So if you started 4 years, did you have the dance, the idea of the dance, the performance already, or?
No, actually, I was trying to sell the previous piece, and so I did, actually, they accepted the previous piece, but then they had some problems, and they had to postpone a year, and then I had to negotiate with them if I could go instead with the new piece, because otherwise it gets really complicated for us to rehearse two pieces at the same time. I mean, a lot of companies do it, but it depends on your level of development, as far as financial mm-hmm. development yes. of the company, to be able to have two pieces rehearsing at the same time. So they accepted to take the new piece, so they're kind of okay. going blindly about this.
Oh, you know? Okay. Yeah. Well, first of all, yeah, I have it written down here someplace, but my papers are scattered about. We should also refer to these by names. It's
that the pieces, you
yes,
mean?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so the previous piece was K5, and this one, okay, here at Agora La Danse, it's called Soupe du Jour, and in the other places that we've performed, I like to call it Mindscapes Soupe du Jour, because for me, the part of Mindscapes is extremely important. As the word says it, it's like drawings, you know, so you imagine those drawings because they're not on paper, you know, but then of course they are portrayed by the bodies and the lighting and, you know, all the composition on stage. But for me, it's really like,
so then why
landscapes.
Why the difference in title here and elsewhere?
It's a question of adaptability too. It seemed like it would fit better with Agora de la Danse, so it's okay, because I really wanted to approach this creation with a lot of adaptability, even up to the point of using half of the title only. I don't mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's everything is sort of, yeah, by the seat of your pants.
Yes, okay. Yes. I mean, it's very structured and it's mm-hmm. predetermined. Everything is predetermined, mm-hmm. but there's flexibility. So things can change order, and some things can be shorter or performed with less people. And we try to adapt to each performance mm-hmm. space. And at Agora, it's been quite a pleasure and a surprise mm-hmm. to use different elements of the space that I thought, oh, it's a simple idea, and yet it contributes so much to the piece. Just to use, for example, the window in the back to open up the curtain in the mm-hmm. back, and they have these gigantic windows, and also this iron curtain on the side that we use for part of the dance, and a little moment on the stairs, just little things, but it makes you connect to the physical space mm-hmm. of the theater, mm-hmm. and it changes the piece.
Yeah, you become much more aware of your surroundings as opposed to just imposing it.
Yes.
And there it's, you talk about in terms of adaptability. It's you're talking earlier before about when I had seen the National Ballet of Canada.
Yes.
Where they're doing Mary Chouinard's piece, 24 Preludes by Chopin, where initially, if my memory is right, she had choreographed it for 11 people, and then because the National Ballet is larger, they can practice lots of things. They did it for 17 people.
Yes.
And yeah, my understanding of dance is that it is always adaptable.
Exactly.
Although now that I say that, I take it back. There was one piece that we saw, Bettina, which the Australian people with the
The Roadkill.
There was this troupe that was here last year. They played at the Sankyum Sal, mm-hmm. and the woman who had choreographed and directed the show and was also one of the performers mm-hmm. died in some car accident just before they were supposed to go on this mm-hmm. whole worldwide mm-hmm. tour. And so then the people who were performing it decided, yes, the show must go on. They kept that whole trooper spirit and so on, but they very deliberately said every movement has to be the exact same every single night.
Of course.
And
well, it was also theatrical. There was a narrative, so you can't, I think if you have a strong narrative, you can't just take a person out, because you lose half of the plot.
Yes, and I guess also out of respect and the homage mm-hmm. to the person who's disappeared.
Yes, no, that was their whole idea about that.
Yeah.
Was that it was in sort of in her memory,
yes,
and so on.
Yes.
But no, to me, it strikes me, especially now that I'm doing sort of slowly learning about the history of dance, is just not only every performance is slightly different, as you would expect, but then it's from year to year to year.
Yes. And actually, that's precisely the idea. Like, when I say adaptability, it's not like I'm saying, oh, I'm doing something new. You know? It's not that at all. It's precisely because that's what ends up happening all the time that I wanted to approach it from the start like that, you know, from the creative process, say, it's going to move. You know? It's going to change. It's going to adapt. And so be ready for it and to have the tools to do it in a way that it respects the origin of it, too. Mm-hmm.
So then you have sort of
set blocks,
set things, and then in the same way that you have, things planned so that,
it's like a collage.
Yes, okay.
It's like a collage, it's in blocks, and it's also the dancers too, the performers too, they're very distinct individuals, so there's ways of using them too, and some of them know the parts of some other ones, and sometimes I can compose something that is a solo, I can compose a sort of a double solo, but they're so distinct that it doesn't look exactly like the same choreography done in unison, just because their character is so different, you know? So that I think I'm very pleased with the fact that the dancers remain distinct, because I am an individualist, so so even if the choreography is very set, they manage to be very, very different, each one, and they deserve to be themselves.
Are you filming each show?
Yes.
Given that there are differences and so on, sort of picking up which this is a good bit and this
yes. But it's not that different, you know, like it's not like improvised or anything. So it's more subtle than that, the changes. I think it's more about once you start in a theater that it changes. Like now that we're at Agora, I don't think it's going to change that much each evening.
Okay.
You know? Yeah.
And so you have five dancers and one musician.
Right, now it's six at Agora.
Oh, okay.
It's six dancers and one musician.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And the pieces are really abstract and very elegant.
It's very, very designed, like the form-wise, very stylized.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's also wild. So like when you were reading the poem, I was thinking, this ritual is there too, the tribal ritualistic, there's the animal there, even in the stylized form, there's this animal pulsion, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, is that where your inspiration comes from for this piece?
No.
Soup du jour,
Soup du jour is more about the term in itself is more about the fact that the ingredients play a part, like the ingredients of the day according to the theater. Also, if the dancers change, and hopefully one day we will be able to integrate a local dancer too. That would be the ultimate dream.
How long did it take to, from conception to performance?
It started last year in my mind and while working on my own and with the dancers. We've had about 130 hours, which is not much.
That's with 3 weeks work.
Well, we didn't do it in 3 weeks.
Yes, no, but I'm just thinking 40-hour work week and 3 weeks. Yeah, yeah. That's not an awful
lot of
time.
And I worked a lot, like 2 hours with one, 2 hours with one, 2 hours with one, along different periods to develop things with each one, and so. But that was also determined by the budget too. Although there were some grants that I appreciate very much, but it's a big group.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And where did the idea? Was there a certain sort of eureka moment? This is what I want to do. This is how I envision it. Or was it a slow, gradual?
No, I made some drawings and I said I'm going to go from there and. No theme, just images, and let myself go. It's not what I used to do before. I used to have very definite themes in the past and force myself to respect the theme and to stay coherent. And this time I said no.
Oh.
It's just purely aesthetic at this point.
Well,
it's like short stories rather than a novel.
Yeah, definitely. It's more, but I would say more, although some people can receive some stories, I would say more like a tableau, des petits tableaux.
And then you save the drawings?
Did I save the drawings? Oh, yes.
Okay, because that's something that you do, because both Bettina and myself have the visual arts background. Something goes, oh, yeah, that'd be way cool to see as an exhibit. Just sort of like put the drawings up in sort of frames or something like that.
Yeah.
And whether it's in the lobby of something or at way after the fact.
Yeah,
and then
all the lines, how the hands go, the foot, this, that, the head. So.
Are you that precise in determining ahead of time what you want? Or are these starting points and then...
They're starting points, but then I keep developing the precision. Yeah, okay. Can be tough on the dancers.
So do you get a lot of the movements as you're working with the dancers, or are you going in with your sketches and you've got it pretty much sorted out?
I go in with the work and in my head too. Mm. It's also because it's there. I come already with the desire to place that on them. But another way of organizing the work is also to have it ready instead of looking for it in the studio, because then. Again, budget.
Yeah, that's true. Much more efficient.
Yes, yes.
And also, of course, your experience. How long have you been in the business now?
Oh, 7 years?
Yeah.
37, 38 years? Yeah.
So you show up in the studio and you pretty much know what you want by now.
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah.
What brought you, because we should back up as far as the history and stuff like that. You're originally from Colombia.
I was born in Colombia, yes.
And then how did you end up in Montreal?
Well, I was born in Colombia and I was not into dancing at all. And then at 16, I saw a performance by a Spanish company, which was in 1973. And it seemed spectacular. For me, it was great because at the time, it was extremely modern, very surrealist. They had the classical technique, but visually it was totally crazy, and I fell in love with that. And then suddenly I had this revelation. I said, okay, this is what I have to do. And I left the country like a few months after that. I quit school, and I heard the people from this company told me about a teacher in Madrid, and so I went to look for the teacher. I was 16 years old, and I went to Madrid and started studying and started working there as a dancer. And then I came here at a time when everybody was talking about Montreal. You know, that was the 89, the, you know, 80s. It was Montreal was...
Yeah, that was when it was
the big thing. And I was at an age where I had been dancing up until then, and I was starting to want to be creative, and I had... heard about Montreal being not only the most important city in contemporary dance, but also that there were a lot of independent artists as far as individual, you know, like a writer writes or a painter paints, you know, a one-man show that the choreographer does himself, the performance, and also about age. There were several people here who were more than 30 or 35, and there were choreographing and dancing themselves, and I was 32 or something like that. So and I thought, oh, that's the place to go, and that's why I came.
That's cool, because I would never be able to do something like that myself. I'm very much a homebody, and getting me out of stuff and doing new things is
it's very scary.
So you've been here since the late 80s then?
Since 89.
All right.
Yes, it was like start from scratch.
And you have your own company?
Now, yes. Mm-hmm. I founded the company in 2003, so it's rather young, the company, yes.
Mm. And by the way, Catherine, you can jump in at any time. We have...
Thank you.
Although, hold on, that is always a help if we get your microphone up. Then people can hear you.
Hi.
Yes, we have Catherine Lessard in studio as well with us. Since it sounds like, Lena, that you... did a lot of traveling up and moving around and doing scary stuff up until 89. Then the follow-up question is, what keeps you in Montreal now?
Oh, Montreal is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's so easy. You have the best of civilization, and you still have the comfort of a town that is not too big. People are extremely open-minded and very efficient and relaxed at the same time. It's really a perfect combination. And I don't think it's easy to find that quality of living in many places in the world. So Definitely. I love it here. Yes.
I agree entirely. I've heard nice things about Barcelona, but I've never been.
Okay. Yeah, it's nice too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I love Barcelona. One of my favorite cities.
Yeah.
So, but you were staying here because of the strong dance community?
Yes. Definitely. So it's still extremely strong, for sure. Mm. Perhaps it needs to develop more, the audience needs to develop more, although we can't complain. I mean, it's been growing, and we should be grateful, but it's still not enough because there's too many artists, so we need mm-hmm. more, and it's a small city, so, and I guess it's the same for the other arts, you know.
Although I've heard figures bandied about that there's sort of like 7,000 people in Montreal who follow dance.
It's good.
Yes, it's very good, because there we had guy Bradley Michaud in from Los Angeles mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about how he thinks that there are 5,000 people who follow dance in Los Angeles.
Imagine.
Yeah. And it's mm-hmm. Three times the size of Montreal.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. Except that here, contemporary dance, the production of contemporary dance here is a lot higher than in Los Angeles.
So that's because we have so many people.
And so many artists.
Mm-hmm.
The percentage of artists here is very, very high. So.
No, that's one of the things that I'm... And you can jump in at any time. I'm asking... I'm mm-hmm. on microphone way too much today.
But, you're on a roll.
But no, it's the sort of thing where... Yeah, you talk about the highs of Montreal dance in the late 80s, early 90s, and so on. And this is just a pet theory of mine that I haven't really backed up, but I recognize that the government has done an awful lot more, or the original funding, since then.
Yes.
To the point that now there are an awful lot of companies that only exist because of government funding, and
yes.
I'm trying to think maybe... Yeah, this is sort of like very right-wing thought and stuff
yes.
like that, at which point I probably should... Which somebody in the station might come
there's
along.
There's a trapdoor that's going to open up underneath your chair any moment now.
But it's the sort of thing where if the companies didn't have to be so dependent on government funding mm-hmm. and then the whole system that mm-hmm. implies, which mm-hmm. is jury-driven mm-hmm. and writing mm-hmm. grants and
yes.
so on, that there might be a much more... daring chance-taking.
I don't agree, but...
That's all right. I come out with all sorts of things. But to me, I'm trying to identify why there has been that lull recently, why Montreal lost that high that it had in the late 80s.
Oh, I don't think it has lost it at all. What is it based on this...
Well, just in terms of dance, it's the sort of thing where I can remember when Edward Locke and Louise LeCavalier went on tour with David Bowie.
Yes.
And that was, whoa, my God, this is cool.
But,
and,
you know, it's what's happening is in the rest of the world it's developing. That's why it's not so remarkable anymore, you know. But Montreal is still very avant-garde in taking risks in the creation. It's just that the rest of the world is doing that too. So, like, for example, what's happening in Europe now, it's a lot closer to what is created here than it used to be. And the States too, they're starting to take risks. So, I'm not a specialist, but that is my impression. And so the contrast is less remarkable. But, you know, it's like Sting was saying once in an interview that there's so many artists that tour and sell at his level that it's a lot harder to be a star now. So in a way,
the rest of the world has caught up with us.
Yeah, yes, of course.
I still want to be out in the front.
Well, yeah, that's a way of seeing things. I always think that what's important is to participate and to keep the art moving and growing, you know. To be the best, I'm not sure it's...
I don't necessarily say the best, but it's just I do like it when there's something that can be sort of attached. This is from Montreal.
Yeah.
I'm from Montreal, therefore I am extremely proud of this, as opposed to sort of that concept of the rising tide brings all boats up. I want to feel special about being a Montrealer.
Yeah, but I think it's still like that. Anyway, when I go in Canada, definitely.
I believe you have much more experience outside of the town than I do.
It's still like that, definitely. When you say from Montreal, it's like, in Toronto, they love dance from Montreal. They go crazy for it, you know, and the rest of Canada. And I think Europe too, but I mean, I'll let you know.
Okay.
We'll do a poll.
But yes, and about the grants too, I just wanted to say something. Of course, we artists, I don't think we like the grant system, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it too. I heard the other day on TV, there was this discussion precisely about this, and saying that artists should be faced with the difficulties of making their work marketable too, as everybody else, instead of being protected by grants, etc., etc., etc. And I totally disagree, because if you have to be marketable, then you have to respond to what the people are expecting. So then where does the research go? Where does your personal approach go? If you want to do something that is not necessarily what people expect, then you can't do it just because you won't sell it. So it can't be marketable.
No, I agree with you entirely about that. Market-driven, to me, market-driven anything is not art.
Exactly.
It's commerce.
Yeah, but where else then would the funding come from?
Exactly.
Oh, in terms of, it is the sort of thing where, look at the...
Well, it could be private, but...
Yeah, but look at science, you know, how much of pure science...
Exactly.
Look at our space program.
Exactly.
You know,
why not?
It's like, just looking at stars or what?
Yeah.
You're sending...
Why not art?
Yeah, it's the same approach.
Although to me, it's a sort of thing where, I come back to it's... doesn't necessarily have to be market-driven. You just come back to the richest person in the province who started his circus company just because he wanted to do it. And then he was doing it well enough that then the market said,
if
I'm following that, that is great and so on, as opposed to...
Circus is very market-driven.
But it's exactly...
It's a crowd-pleaser by definition.
When Cirque du Soleil started, it wasn't... It wasn't a crowd pleaser at all. It was Ringling
Brothers. Because it changed things.
Yes.
But circus arts and the kind of work that Lina is doing, not really the same thing.
No, but I keep coming back to where it's the sort of thing, what I don't like with the grant system is just that sort of peer review stuff where it's then a, like with science, it's a relatively large group of peer reviewers.
It's still peer, and the people in your field are reviewing your proposal.
Yes, but there, and it's just a matter of getting that published. It's not a matter of doing
it's
the
also
research.
It's also funding for research.
But it's more that it's a sort of thing to me that by having the juries of three people who then decide upon a written grant application.
Yes.
It's if you're a great grant writer, you're going to get money, but being a great grant writer doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a great choreographer or a great dancer or a great artist of any type.
Definitely. But I think we can go back to saying that the audience needs to develop more, and the interest in, I think that can save us a lot, you know. But that they don't come to see the shows just because somebody says they're good or that's the best, and so that's where you go, but because the journalists can help a lot, and they don't quite do that, you know. They to help the audience be interested in the experience of going out and seeing a show, you know. So when you have a review that says this, that, and you put an emphasis on something negative, how many people are going to be really stimulated to go? Is it that important? What's more important? That you thought part of the show was not good, or that you encourage people to go and enjoy a 1 hour of dance, you know? It's just 1 hour,
A negative review has never stopped me from doing anything, and it's invariable.
Yeah, but people, you know, people have to count their money too, you know?
But I don't, at least they talk about you. I mean, I find that very often the media won't even...
There,
I mean, it's really, really pathetic.
Yeah.
You look at the media and they will talk about, you know, which starlet got divorced and which other starlet had a see-through dress on by some stupid award show. Yeah. And then the people actually producing culture don't get any airtime and don't get any print
all. That is true.
So I'd rather take like 10 bad reviews if I at least in front of people's eyeballs.
Yes, that is true. Yes, definitely.
And then I'm way familiar with like the visual arts review system, where it was the sort of thing, there are most publications will not publish a bad review.
Okay.
And so at which point, in order to interpret if anybody is doing something good or bad, mm-hmm. you have to read between the lines. Mm-hmm. That should have been mm-hmm. reviewed, but it wasn't. And to me, it's mm-hmm. as a critic, it's if you mm-hmm. do review bad and good, mm-hmm. then your credibility is established. Because
your credibility, but I mean, does that stimulate the audience to consume visual arts?
It's the sort of thing where I know that there are probably lots of people out there who said, okay, if Zeke doesn't like it, that means it's for me. It's amazing. And it's
countercurrent.
Yes.
Yeah. It's because it's just one person's opinion, and if you say, I didn't like it because of this,
yes.
and then you say, well, but that's the point that I like. Like, yes. if you say, I didn't like this movie, the story was too complicated,
yes,
well,
yes.
that's the movie I'm going to see, because I like complicated stories.
Yes.
So
yes.
you just need to qualify
right,
your opinion.
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it's unfortunate with the way that reviews are going these days, where you barely get 250 words, if you get that many
I
at
know,
all.
I know, the space is so limited, yeah.
However, speaking of space being limited and so on, it's 2:34. We got a couple of ads to play and so on. Some market-driven commercialism stuff to do on this community radio station, CKUT 90.3 FM. It's also, we're talking about dance on all sorts of things, movement-museum.blogspot.com. We will be back momentarily.
Museum, opinions, and primary voices. In a world increasingly reduced to a who markets louder philosophy that is, by definition, going to steamroll contemporary dance right out of existence, Movement Museum is an hour-long talk show where all you will hear is honest and compelling opinions. Opinions on why dance matters. Opinions on why dance. Opinions on what dance matters. Opinions on what dance. We talk to dancers, choreographers, teachers, composers, academics, audience members, producers, presenters, and anyone else with an opinion on dance. What moves them? What do they like? And most importantly, why? Live Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and archive for all of eternity Friday mornings at movement-museum.blogspot.com.
And we have returned. In the background, that's the Claudia Quintet with Gary Versace doing their album Royal Toast. It twinkles in the background there, sort of keeps everybody on their toes. Yeah, we're back. This is Movement Museum, where we're talking about dance, and Catherine Lessard had something she wanted to talk about, the granting thing, which was what we were talking about before the break.
Yeah.
And it's an easy way to get you on microphone.
Yeah, well, I think that in the process of decision for the juries, the video is important more and more. Sometimes, even if the grant looks good in the writing, if they're not satisfied with what they see on the video that you send with it, you might not get it. Even for now, at CALC, le Conseil des Arts et des Lettres du Québec, you need to send a video if you want a very small travel grant to go from there to there. So it's more and more important.
So does that mean that dancers and choreographers and other people who are applying for grants now have to not only be great writers so as to write a great grant application, but they also now have to become great filmmakers so that they can make that video?
They have to be great movers.
Yeah, yeah, because the video doesn't have to be like a great quality of film production. It just has to show the work clearly and
yeah,
good quality of image and but yeah.
And as well, there are some fields in contemporary dance that are still so small and, in my opinion, so interesting in the same time. That you need this kind of support and motivation. I come from improvisation. This is the only thing I do, actually, improvising dance and teaching improvisation. And without the support of Organism and the support of some grant or supports of some specific supportive, very supportive places like Studio 303, we couldn't do much in the field of improvisation.
Yeah.
Well, first we should mention Catherine is doing Face Back Profile, which is, that's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's tomorrow.
At Studio 303, and it's at 7 and 9. And then also, Lena, we should mention yours, which is Soupe de Jour at Agora de la Danse, which is 8 o'clock. Agora de la Danse is
8:40 Cherie.
8:40. I was going to cut. Somehow 6 jumped in there, but it's 8:40 Cherie. And that's playing tonight, tomorrow night, and Saturday night.
Saturday is at 4 o'clock.
Saturday it's 4 o'clock, mm-hmm. Yes. And those Saturday matinees are wonderful.
Yeah, it's a new thing in town.
I've been to a couple and I realized, yeah, those afternoon gigs.
Especially in winter, it's such a good idea.
Yeah, it is.
Even in summer. Mm-hmm. It means you don't have to, like, if you have an 8 o'clock show, sorry about your 8 o'clock show, but if you have an 8 o'clock show, do you rush dinner beforehand? Mm. Or do you starve yourself until afterwards? That 4 o'clock thing is,
it's
like...
it's interesting. Yeah, I admit at the beginning I was like, oh, no, why 4 o'clock? Uh-huh. And now it's not so bad. Even I'm motivated to go see shows at 4 o'clock now. So.
Yeah. Maybe one thing I should say about Face Back Profile is that we are a little collective of dancers. Andrew Harrod is part of it, and Patricia Kupers from Belgium, and Mark Moti Zemmelman from the United States, and Charles Van Goetzenhoven, I hope I said it well, from Sherbrooke. So it's a little constellation of improvisers. We're all dancers except Charles. He's a musician playing with looping and violin and short and longer interventions and silence and voice. Yeah.
How did you guys all meet up?
So the Association for Contact Improvisation in Montreal, ACI, is kind of allowing this event to happen every November. So it's a show just before the International Contact Improvisation Jam. So this weekend will be the jam, and the Friday just before this, there's always an improvisation show, which we hope is as professional as we can, so we invite these great people to do it. And also Studio 303 is allowing this, so it's a collaboration of organism.
Okay, and there, in terms of, you talk about this sort of jam that's happening this weekend and so on, yeah, it's... Where's that one happening? Because I haven't heard that
at
all.
So this one is at Centre Chorégraphique Circuit Est.
Okay.
So the big edifice, Jean-Pierre Perrault.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, so and it's like 150 people. And it goes on Saturday from 10 to 10 a.m. to midnight, and Sunday 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And people can just show up and pay the entrance fee and then have the opportunity to practice contact improvisation with a very big crowd. Mm.
So I heard that jams are usually between two people, though. Is that true?
Well, that's a myth. No, contact improvisation is not... it's not strictly a duet form. Mm. It's actually, for me, an exploration of how your body and your mind are able to respond to the environment in the present tense, really in the present moment. Mm-hmm. And
Is it true that even like an object can be your partner in contact?
Oh yeah, from, why not?
Like the floor is usually your first partner?
Oh yeah, definitely the floor. I mean, the environment is really, is objects, it's space, it's people, but it's also, and that's very important, it's also the forces of the universe going through you, so gravity, electromagnetism, they are part of what goes through our body and what makes us move and react and go back to floor and take flight. So we play with all this.
Yeah, tell me more about this body-mind centering.
Oh, body-mind centering. It's another form that is very useful for dancers who practice improvisation and contact improvisation. So we call it, when we contract it, we call it BMC. And actually, it's really all about the moving anatomy. So it's exploring the anatomy, but not in a book, but your body becomes the actor of your exploration. So through movement and through exploring your own bones and systems and fluids, then you understand more about anatomy and you can bring it into the dancing. It gives presence to everything that you're doing. as well.
Go ahead.
No, it's still yours.
No, I just found it very intriguing because apparently what you do sort of links to so many other things like Feldenkrais and Alexander Technique. And then, you know, it's just this like long list of, you know, like yoga and, you know, physics.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that in 1972, the founders of Contact Improvisation were actually interested in creating a performance. So they got together, and then their hypothesis was more Steve Paxton's hypothesis, and the partners were following this idea. But then this idea was to show the body as it is when it responds to the environment. So you don't have to add a desire to be aesthetic, you don't have to add a desire to be artistic. The body himself is the whole story. So he did shows, very interesting shows, like dressing and undressing very slowly on stage, so you can see how the body functions when it's doing a very ordinary thing. And from these observations, a lot of walking. He did 10 years of walking with a group. And from these observations, it became more and more obvious that the brain, I mean, the intellectual brain can shut down a little so the body can take over and really resolve the enigmas, find the solutions to what's going on in slow motion, but also in very fast and risky situations. And the form emerged from that.
Yeah, you notice that a lot now in postmodern dance, this idea of the gesture as opposed to the dance movement, right? It's all about, you know, slower movement and more observation.
Yeah, observation is a very important part of it. We're talking about contact improvisation here, but the field of improv in dance is bigger, and contact could be one of the possibilities that you use when you improvise, actually. And in this show, Face Back Profile, we are doing dance improvisation. I could say we all have a very strong background in contact improv, so it's one of the tools that we're gonna use a lot. But we also use, you know, sometimes very simple things, very simple, the way you look at each other's, or the way you cross the space, or the way you redo something that happened in the beginning of the hour of show, and just building from very small things or from images is also part of dance improvisation. So not only the contact improvisation technique is at itself and practice itself, but a whole field of possibilities is included in improvisation and in this show that we're going to do tomorrow.
I think it requires really a very special talent to do this.
I'm very bad in choreography, actually. I don't know if I should say that on the radio, but I have a hard time like to pick it up and to... Though I find it very interesting to be doing the same thing with a group in front of a mirror, it's kind of, wow, I have a rush of adrenaline when it happens to me, because it's not so often. But I'm not so good at it because I'm very much into the process of listening what's going on here on stage, here in the studio, here inside this body, there in what I'm seeing, and then responding to it. And then the whole piece is created from that.
No, but that's my understanding of how actually an awful lot of just choreographed dances are made, is that you start from one point, see how it goes, and which one, whoops, we went a little bit too far there, let's back it up a little bit, let's go this way now, and so on. And it is a very organic process.
Yes, certainly.
Unless you're Lena, who comes in with sketches.
Yeah, that's it. I think we're really totally opposite.
Yeah.
And at the same time, that essence is the same, what you just said, you know?
In the process of creation, I think choreographers love using improvisation to be inspired and then create the piece. What I do is I stay at this stage of seeing what's going on. And then maybe they go at the second level where they pick up some things that they're interested in and then they put it together to create a piece. Sometimes you have pieces where you have some parts of the piece are improvised and some parts are settled. So some mixes are happening more and more, I think, as well.
Although, to my mind, it's more just when you're saying that you don't do choreography very well. I just say this. Oh, this works. Yeah. This works. This works. And then quickly turn away from the mirror, write some notes down, and you can build a piece that way.
Yeah. So we could say we are choreographers of the present moment all the time, continuously, and it requires a special concentration. Yeah, I agree with that.
Now, the sort of contact improv that I'm most familiar with is Les Imprudences. Which happens at Cafe Campus once a month or something like that. And I think they're happening this weekend as well. So apparently, Lena, you're getting shut out. This is the weekend of contact improv. And what are you doing here? you're the one that the exception to the rule.
I am. Yes. I am totally. Yeah. With a hyper-stylized. Yeah.
No, this whole jam thing fascinates me, and it's sort of thing. If you pay your money, do you have to dance, or can you just watch?
You can just watch.
Okay.
You can just. And one thing that is very interesting about this is that sometimes you go into a jam, and you see a situation that seems like it's social, but actually, if you really know why you're there, like you're there to practice. Being here and responding to what's going on and probably be in contact with some others or just with your environment, it's not social anymore. It's really a physical situation that you're entering in. And I think it's important in our mind when we go into a jam to be settled a little bit like that so we don't fall into the blah blah having conversations a lot but really focus on the practice, you know. Well, that's my opinion. In school, I could say some people really like it to be social. That's not so much my thing.
Now, do you find yourself also just sort of falling back into the same set of movements?
Patterns. The risks. The risks of patterns. Yeah. Well, patterns are a risk, and they also save lives sometimes, you know. Being there in the space and having to deal with what's going on is like a survival situation somehow. And to notice how your body survived to this is also sometimes to notice that some patterns are coming back and back. Though the danger can be that you have a few settled moves that you like to do and they're quite acrobatic and then you always do it in a random order, then it becomes a little out of improvisation then. So it's good to continue to take classes and to continue to really build the improviser in yourself so you can trick yourself a little all the time, even after 20 years or...
Now, the other question.
It doesn't become like a recipe or like a formula. Do you find that every dancer has their own little formula that they follow?
Yeah, we all fall into formulas. And sometimes going for the very obvious on stage is fine as well. Mm. When you know you're doing it, you know, it's like, okay, for that part of the piece, it was so obvious. Everybody laughed. Everybody understood. And it's okay.
So when you're dancing with a partner and you know them well, you can kind of predict what kind of part of the recipe they're going to call up at any given time? Mm-hmm. Is it different if you dance with somebody you don't know at all?
It is different, though I would tend to position myself as a little bit like a stranger in every dance that I'm performing or having with people. Like, not take for granted that we know each other so well and take for granted that it's going to be so great. Oh no, not that person, it's going to be so bad. But really start from nothing. Nothing is a very good place to start from. And really, like, act like you're strangers and see what's going to happen. Then you can trick yourself a little and not go back into patterns. Well, less.
Yeah. And with face back profile, it's a certain thing, given that it is a performance,
Yes.
I do know that in musical improv, there are various visual cues that are used. So, okay, we got to wrap this up now so that we can get the second set, start, get the people out and get the second set in. That it is sketched out slightly in terms of, okay, we start as a group, then you solo, then you solo, then you solo in this order. And obviously that's somewhat fluid. Things can change. Are there similar sorts of cues that you guys use within the show? And can I then ask what the secret cues are?
Yeah, for Faceback Profile, actually, we are rehearsing this week, so I'm right in it. And I have to say, it's pretty open. It's pretty open. We have a couple of cues, but not much. And sometimes I did some improvised show that were much more structured. Then the frame is more structured, but the movement is still improvisation. So you can have different levels of openness into the and of framing into the improvisation.
And what level would you say Faceback Profile is?
Pretty open. Pretty open. Oh. Yeah.
So that second set might be coming in late.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's an occasion for the audience to really see then how it works when you're there and you have to compose with the moment and with what you receive from your partners and from the sounding or from the silence or from the lighting. And actually, because we're trained to do it, we know how to do this and how to not do this as well. So I think we'll just be fine with the very open structure that we have.
I'm certain you'll be fine. I'm just looking for some hints and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
I see you coming. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, the answer could be it's pretty open. And it's nice to mention that Patricia Kuppers is also our invited guest this year. So for it's our guest for this show, but it's also our guest to offer a warm-up in the big jam that's going to happen at the Circuit Est. So it's going to be like a 45 minutes warm-up for 150 people in the same time in the room. And it's really a warm-up for improvisation. So it has nothing to do with repeating things in front of a mirror. And so she's there for that. And she's also giving workshops. And it's improvisation workshops at 303 and at LUCAM. So, well, I think on the website of these two structures, you can have more information about it, for sure. Yeah.
And then Lena, we got to go back and mention your stuff as well.
Yes.
Because there, I'm sort of fascinated with you. Sort of, from what I understand, it's you're doing improvised, but much more based on the spaces. You're saying this is a very structured thing.
Yeah, it is.
And then it's then because the spaces themselves are different that
I try to integrate the physical characteristics of the space, of each space that we use. But yeah, there's no improvisation. No. So it's totally the opposite. It's even
more theoretical improv by saying that you're trying to test out the spaces and wanting to make it move and so on. To me, in a theoretical way, they're similar enough.
Similar enough?
Yeah, in terms of that because you are saying that we're testing out different spaces and trying to do a similar performance in different spaces and take advantage of what the spaces have to offer. Mm-hmm. That is a form of improvisation.
It is, but I mean, nothing compared to what
they do. No, that I agree entirely.
Yeah.
It was just also a way to try and get in. Okay, Soupe du Jour is
at Agora de la Danse, and there's tonight, tomorrow at 8:00 and Saturday at 4:00.
Yes, and then my mom saw it last night, and it's one of the things when I go see shows, I do my best to go in complete blank slate.
Okay.
So I do not read the press releases. I'll try and figure out if there's a plot. I ask somebody, is there an intermission? And that's about the extent of what I try and get myself as information. I wanted to throttle my mom because she went to see you last night.
She did.
And she emailed and said, it's wonderful. It's great.
Oh, great. That's so glad you like
spoiler alert.
Yes, exactly. But it's a sort of thing where
there's no intermission.
Thank you. But I don't want to know that yet. Thank you. But at which point, I'd like to thank both of you very, very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much as well, Bettina. You make me sound way better than I have any right to be in my life. My name is Zeke. This has been Movement Museum. Johnny Black is here with Positive Vibes, and we will speak to you all next week.